I don't know what to do right now. This is the first time we're doing this, and it's making me nervous.
Hey, just act like it's everything's regular, man.
Well, I grew up doing theater, and for me, the only thing that scares me, and I guess we're starting now, fuck you for beginning it this way, but for me, I started theater, and if there's a ton of people, there's hundreds of people in the audience, I don't care. It's fine. But if it's one-on-one, no matter who it is, it can't do it. It stresses me out.
Like auditions with specific and stuff? Things
too. Yeah, if it's just one or two people, like, you know them. You see them. They're there.
Yeah.
It stresses me out, which you would think it would extend to me being a nerd guy playing a fantasy world for a bunch of people to see in D&D.
But you think so, but...
It doesn't, because everybody's a nerd, and that's fine. And we're all in a situation where if a normal person walked into this room and stood there, they'd be very confused and probably judgmental. But do we care?
No.
We don't care.
And that's very much discussed in a lot of our early podcasts, like our role-playing episodes.
Do those still exist?
Yeah, they still... What do you mean they still exist? Of course they exist.
It's been a while. And speaking of that, though, I mean, if you're... I don't know if we're jumping right off the bat and mentioning this right now.
We should. The elephant should we? In the Are room? We? Yeah, talk about
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, why am I nervous? So we're currently recording video
for the first right now time
for this thing. Well, recording it for the first time. We've done face-to-face shit with me and him
True.
Looking at each other before. We've done that.
We also streamed it once.
We streamed the podcast?
Yeah, do you remember that?
No,
we
not
did.
At all.
I'm pretty sure.
No, I don't remember. I think we probably did do it, but I don't recall it all. But... I guess starting off, this is the story for this week. This is story time. Due to the world being absolutely crazy right now, and a lot of unfortunate things being happening in every corner of the world, I was, as if you listened to the last episode, going to visit Ryan in his humble abode to play D&D and hopefully get our first live play session thing done.
Yeah, it was all set up, ready to go. And then...
Unfortunately... our good friend Kenneth, who you've heard on several of these episodes before, had a friend visit his house who has maybe interacted with somebody who had COVID before. Kenneth went and got tested. He's fine, but his aunt just got tested positive for it, whatever the word or phrase for that is. I was going to stay at his house, no go. Whole point of the trip was to be in person, play D&D with Kenneth, with Jamie, with Ryan, have the session and do it. So we dropped it off, moved it a month forward. Ryan and I probably were feeling a bit antsy about that, so we're like, okay, what can we do right now that feels like we're getting something done? And then he just like, bam, okay, we got a YouTube channel. I'm like, all right. So Ryan's been uploading our past episodes. I think we've got like 1 through 10 up there. There's a daily limit. They don't want us to spam. But we're getting those up. And this
may
come up.
Yeah, it's a bowl is what I'm saying. This is a bowl. But we're getting it up one slowly. We have, I think, up to 18 maybe as the recording this episode. I have up to like 22 uploaded, but I'm
ready
slowly.
To go.
Yeah, slowly getting them out.
So you're going to see a bunch of old episodes up to 20, and then you just got episode 63.
Well, I think I'm going to try to rush them out as fast as I can and then put this one. So if you're going to watch the video of this, then it'll probably be a little bit behind.
Yeah. At some point, I don't know if we'll like bring things on the screen, but I'm pretty sure it's going to end up just being my and his face and whatever we decide to show and tell. Ryan has a little sneak peek today. Apparently, he's got something he wants to show us.
It's right
so
over
I'm excited
here.
About that. So we'll talk about that at some point or whenever you deem it worthy.
But just go type in the Dungeon Crawl podcast on YouTube, should pull it up. Or if you do the little link tree thing in the little thing below, we'll probably get that added here very soon.
Yeah, if you just search the Dungeon Crawl, we're not popular enough. And that is a super common thing that people put as like a category of something they do on their channel, like a Dungeon Crawl whenever they're going through a video game or something.
Well, there's also a Nintendo product that came out called Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl.
And that's not us. We're not affiliated with them.
Yeah, so that takes up some spot. But if you add podcasts on any search engine, then we come up immediately. So
yeah. There's also, I don't know if anybody out there can help us with this. I reached out to Twitch, and I sent them, I've got a direct link to their customer service. Nothing special. Whoa. There is a Twitch channel called The Dungeon Crawl. And they had the last time they posted was 11 years ago, Ryan has told me.
Yeah.
We would love that name. So if you're somehow being like, oh, hey, there's a podcast that got released 11 years after I stopped doing this thing. Wonder if they're wondering if you're listening right now.
But yeah, Braxton made a point. He sent a message that Twitch did start like getting rid of old accounts. I'm not entirely sure why this one is still around.
They have to be active or looking, or somebody pokes another channel every now and again.
I guess they sign in.
The ironic thing is that in their terms of services or whatever you consider this, is that if there are views on their channel at all, it stays. So we could be perpetuating it by simply checking on their profile. We'll find out. Hopefully this works. But all of this means this podcast will be in video format on several places, hopefully this week, sometime soon. And it's exciting because this week and within the next couple of hours from us, Tasha's coming out. So keep an eye out for next week's episode as well. But for today, Ryan, I have a task for you.
Oh, okay. Right, well, I just first before your task and, you know, before your BS, your segues get started.
Yeah.
It'd be exciting for in person now too. In person podcasts and video form will be fun.
Oh yeah. We can look awkward together.
I was thinking it'd be on the D&D table. I'm gonna get another mic stand anyway. So I'm just gonna have two mic stands. Just like a good old normal podcast, the camera pointed at us. Good old nice times.
All right. And then whatever the hell we decide to do for the live play, I'm sure it'll be mostly Discord until I figure out where I'm gonna be living at some point. But long preamble. He's Ryan.
I took a sip of water. He's Braxton.
I didn't take a sip of water, but I am Braxton. This is the Dungeon Crawl, and today I have a task for Ryan.
I need him
to do something for me. I don't know. What? This was going to be a better segue, but basically we're talking about quests today, and that's how all of them start. Thank you. Welcome to Braxton's Good Segue Shop. If you like him, shop around, look, and we've got the best segues behind Curtain 1.
Well done.
Behind Curtain 1 is just a fetch quest, the best one ever. Today, on the Dungeon Crawl here today. Like. Yeah. If you haven't figured it out by the title, by whatever the hell we've mentioned, by this wonderful segue, I have been working on quests mostly in the live play, figuring out what's going where, what's going to pull people, what are they going to do? Because when you're playing in a fantasy world, you want to do things in that world, right? Hopefully.
Usually.
If it's interesting. And one of the ye old mechanisms that people employ within video games, within books or whatever, people go on a quest. Lord of the Rings. What was the quest, Ryan? Little pop quiz.
In Lord of the Rings to drop off the ring in Mordor, man. The
Mount Doom.
Super easy, right? That's a quest. Put it on your journal.
It's the OG
put
stuff.
Put ring in mountain. And then you go and you get a bunch of other quests and side shit that pops up. And then you're like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. So, I wanted to talk with you because you've been a DM for me specifically for like going on 4 years now, as we've mentioned before. And in our games, it never really feels like we get quote unquote quests. Like stuff just kind of happens. Mm-hmm. So, even outside of the podcast, I feel like you would be a good person to discuss this information about and how you go on making it not feel like somebody just says, hey, I've got this cart. And I don't want it destroyed. Can you take it from point A to point B?
I feel like I've definitely done something like that at some point.
I don't know if you have.
Really? Maybe definitely in the first campaign, right?
Definitely in the first campaign, but I was new at it. I didn't notice, so there's different quests for different people.
Do you think it's a bad thing if DMs do those types of quests?
If I'm playing like Monster Hunter, and I get to a new area, and you get scientists on a cart so I can go check out a giant shit from a walking volcano. Shout out to Monster Hunter World. That's boring. But it depends. I mean, if you talked in your session zero and your friends are wanting the most stereotypic medieval RPG where they're just getting quests shoved into them, and it's just like, hey, I'm Urgo Blurgo from the village over yonder. All our stuff is gone, and I want my stuff back. Can you go kill the goblins? There's your quest.
Yeah.
So, as Ryan always says, I guess we need to start with the basics and figure out what the hell even is a quest, right?
That's a good point. I feel like most people probably know what quests are, but...
Yes, so...
What constitutes a quest? Is it...
A thing that needs to be done?
I guess, yeah, in its basic needs. Form.
Basic form. Well, I mean, is there an advanced form?
I'd say more advanced would be something that's, you know, we have quest lines... Which string multiple things you have to do together, multiple quests in a line. You know, you have, I would say, diverging quest lines, some that are, you know, like a branch. Think of like a tree, you know, like a family tree in a way, where you start with one.
Those. I know you've got an insane family tree.
I do. Yeah. You start here he doesn't even and deny. Then you can go down another quest. And then let's say the players they have an option, you know, a choice A or B. And then that makes another tree. It goes down and then, you know, those can branch off into more and more and more. And obviously as a DM, you can't really plan for all those other things. So you create the initial idea, the starting quest, and kind of go down. And once choices get brought up that you present to the players, let them do it. And then ideally, you know, unless you're doing crazy long sessions, you'll have a break between. And so you can figure out, okay, they've done that. How do I progress this quest? What can I do from there?
So as a player, and what I've noticed specifically in Ryan's games, because of the way we've begun with our specific players and our specific characters, they come from all different walks of life. More so recently, the quests that we've had, which are like here, 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 and here, have started to converge.
Yeah,
so I know Ryan's had this quest line or quest tree that he's mentioning. He's like, shit. These are branching out and arguments are happening and things are going everywhere because quests often have rewards or incentives or emotional, what's the word? Emotional ties. But there's like, what's that word? Closure for these tragic backstories that we've made. So like specifically in a session that we just did, two very important characters to two of the players in the game now have a direct connection. And it was just like,
yeah.
Okay, so you got to be careful with quests.
And what,
but
even
in the
one
beginning,
of our players in that session, I don't remember exactly what they said, but I was like, "Yeah, I didn't." Or maybe I said it first. I said, "I didn't expect this all to happen, you know, in this way, all at once." And then one of our players was like, "What do you mean? You know, how did you not expect this to happen?" I was like, "Well, you could have done this. You could have done that. You could have gone this way. You could not come here. You could not even mention this to this guy." So there's a lot of different options for this one encounter to go. It just so happened that everything kind of converged at the same time. It's very cool.
Yeah. So how does it even get to that point? I suppose starting with the DM, what the facility of a quest in and of itself is because a character that you've created or fabricated in a town or whatever the hell has a thing that they need to do, or you have a thing that you want the players to do so they can experience life. Or whatever, be it drop that ring off to Mordor at the beginning of the quest and a bunch of shit happens in between. You'll start making these, assuming you've got a town established. And the thing that I've really loved so far about my experience as a DM specifically with quests and doing mostly improv is they happen or can happen organically, just like a cat running up. You can see it now.
Yeah, you can finally see JD. So come over to the YouTube channel, check out JD in all his glory.
He's just hanging out there. But yeah, quests for me, what I've been surprised, I would say being new at D&D, quote unquote, within the past 4 years, I still feel like that's pretty new because it's an old thing, is that it doesn't ever feel as basic as like being in Skyrim and having a literal quest journal and knowing that odds are if there's an NPC, I can talk to them and they'll give me a thing to do because I paid for this game. And I need things to happen and to go about it. But if it's D&D, it's quite different. So I wanted to explore that concept a bit. So, Ryan, for you, we talked during the Icewind Dale episode about one of the requirements, I think, for receiving a quest. It was like they had an X amount of time or like certain things they needed to do in a mechanic sense for it to proc this quest, I suppose. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and there was the one that specifically that I know irked me was the one where it was like, you have to roll a persuasion check to talk to the people in the village to progress a certain quest instead of actually talking to them.
Yeah.
I guess actually I think it was to start the quest was, yeah, to ask about this. You know, you've heard this plot hook, which it kind of leads into the quest lines. The plot hooks are just like rumors and stuff. Like one of our early rumors in our game was that there's the they wanted to buy some stuff from a blacksmith, an armory.
Oh my God.
And this was like maybe second session. And the guy was like, he told him the price, and they were like, this is really expensive. And
we had no fucking gold. We just started.
Yeah, you couldn't buy anything. And he said, well, this is expensive because the iron and all the ore has not been arriving lately. If you can go down there and figure out what the hell's going on, that'd be fantastic. They're like, okay, well, if we're in the area, sure. And then, a couple sessions later, they finally head down south to a different village, and they hear there that mines, people have been coming out speaking mumbo jumbo and talking all weirdness. Still kind of curious, but they're still far ways out. And then months and months and months later, they finally get to that area, like, you know what? Fuck it. We're in the area. It sounds interesting. Let's go check it out.
This is one of the worst experiences ever in terms of literal for the characters themselves. Uh-huh.
So that starts the quest itself, the quest line. But the plot hook is what, reels in the players.
Well, shit can get away from you. And I think one of our early thesis statements that we had about the way characters interact with the world or players interact with the world is primarily through NPCs.
Yeah.
But even more so at the root of this are these quests, because if a player is in a town and they have nothing to do or nothing that they want, why are they playing the game, I guess, is the statement to make. So with that quest here, if you wanted to dissect it, basically, all the agency was on us. We had a thing that we wanted to buy and couldn't fucking buy it because we had no money. And it really led to one of the most iconic quests in our entire campaign. Again, this is just the one that Ryan and I run that we've been doing for the past 3 years or so with our friends. And to however long it took, we finally get back to our starting town after going from level 1 to level 10. There have been 10 levels, 9 levels, or however many between this thing. And we're doing that super fun thing where you run in and everybody's cheering you on. We're like, whoa, we've been called in by the church of this place because we possibly murdered somebody really important. Yeah, so nobody's liked us that much lately. We get in here and it's like, yeah, yeah.
It's a starting village.
Yeah. So that was a really fun thing to do.
And of course, by the time they get back and by the time they finally have completed this quest, got the guy, the ore and stuff that he needs, solved the problem, they now have the money to buy the world pretty much. The stuff they need at the very least. So now they don't need this discount.
Yeah, so for me, quests are the way that your characters leave a tangible effect on the world. The thing I hate is that are those sorts of games that are like Skyrim, where literally nothing would happen if you didn't interact with that character. Everything's on pause, basically, and I think it can be the sign of a bad DM if you run your game entirely that way. Now, maybe that's the way your players want to do it. You want to be the Dragonborn, you want to have the power trip, but having organic experiences like a mining route not fucking existing and you guys being able to solve it by doing a quest that I honestly completely forgot about that engagement in the very beginning.
Yeah,
and then we go down and find
you guys.
Yeah. So quests are the way to weave your world together, I suppose. But when you're writing them, do you literally think about this is a quest, I'm making this, or is it just you writing something?
It depends. I think it can stem from multiple different directions. You either make a specific quest that involves a player's backstory, but then, of course, one player is going to be really interested in that and the rest won't. You can create it specifically just from you're reading the monster manual and you find a creature you really like and you make a plot hook based around that. And obviously, you can expand that and make a full quest. And that can be more of a offshoot quest, like a side quest. Obviously, you can definitely tie it in. I'd recommend you do tie it into at least one or two larger quest lines. But I think the biggest way that I do it is we've talked this before, I think with world building, maybe in one of the older episodes, where I'll start with this initial big bad or this crazy quest line that I have envisioned. And of course, that you really can't, I think, teach. That's something that you have to think on and okay, what do I want this big campaign to be about? And then once you decide, you start from there and slowly work back and think, okay, who's working for this guy? Where's this coming from? The chicken and the egg, or the rooster and the bread situation.
Several analogies upon analogies.
Yeah, they have to make stuff. And so eventually you trace it all the way back to goblins are attacking a village, they're attacking the village because this happens, and then the players slowly figure that stuff all out. It's really hard to just sit and write quests, at least for me. I think you have to have a good quest, you have to tie in multiple ones of those. Have a creature, have something that ties in the backstory, have it to the overarching quest, and kind of hit all the main points.
Yeah. For me, I think that's a really productive way to do it and a way that I want to transition more to. But I super short-sighted, or I work on the immediate issue. So when I'm starting to make things, it's literally just like, what can I give them to do? And I think I need to get out of that habit and kind of go with what Ryan's been doing. And something that kind of inspired me.
If the players like not. That.
So, yeah, some players do. And I think it can show for sure in the type of world that you run. And again, it just depends on your session zero. Is that what people want? In ours, we run a really story-driven campaign. Same will be said for the live play whenever this eventually goes out. You guys will notice that. But hot topic right now.
Okay.
CD Projekt Red. Oh. We're not talking about anything bad. So I understand. We're getting there in a month. Let's shit on. Hopefully it'll be out. Yeah. So let's shit on. But no. So one of their lead quest designers, and I think that is literally his job, is just a quest designer. Wow. He has this notebook filled, and it's like super small college ruled of just line after line after line after line of him writing quest lines, strange doodles. It looks like a madman's diary. And that's cool. This is a person whose entire job is just to think of random strings, things to pull people in direction, interesting little trinkets, and then give this to the designers of the world, put it in places. And you're like, okay, how does this guy just have a job for making quests? It really is like the blood vessel of everything. You can jump in this world, but if there's nothing interesting to do, it's just nothing's going to happen.
Well, you mentioned something smart there that MMOs do constantly, where they'll have a very short quest to pull you to a certain section of the map, and then quest lines expand from there. And I think as a DM, you can definitely utilize that. If you really want the players to explore this kingdom or this island, this area of your world that you've been working hard on, give them something interesting that'll send them in that direction. They might not even know they wanted to go there until they're there, and they're like, this is my favorite place I've ever been.
Yeah. Well, you might be fighting yourself, too, because in your case specifically, we've really fleshed out the current country that we're in, or it seems like it. So if you really wanted us to like hop over the lake and go to another continent or to another country, I think it's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
I haven't seen behind the scenes, but moving back to the guy with the crazy journal from CD Projekt Red, they actually took scans of his journal and put it in the game because they needed a psychopathic serial killer's like example of their notebook. So those types of people are the people who really can just toss shit into a world. And it's tough for me too.
Your job that you're, you know, spinning your brain constantly. You have this, you don't have free time. You're free. You know, when I would be spending time thinking about quests, that's my free time. You get like 8 hours a day, sit down with a notepad and just write and write and write. And my film teacher, when I was in film classes, he recommended, and I have this still with me. Obviously you could just use your phone, but have a small notepad that you just kind of keep in your pocket or, you know, purse, whatever, have on you. And if you get an idea, it starts sparking ideas. You just whip it out and start writing and writing and writing and writing. Just, you know, bullet points. And then once you get more time, you can go back and flesh it out.
Yeah. And this really kind of gets away, maybe not necessarily, but from the lazy DM's idea where the first time I'm doing this is a day or an hour before the session and I need to figure this out.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to transition to is I'll be like laying in bed and have an idea. Or the other night, I mentioned to Ryan that I wanted to start writing music again for the live flip because the DMCA shit on Twitch is insane. Would be easier to just make music for it.
Yeah.
But like getting over that motivation hill to like literally just sit up or type on my phone and do something
is
rough.
The lazy DM stuff, we should definitely do like a full deep dive review on someday. But they have this thing we've discussed multiple times, which I think is one of the best things of it, is to just sit down and force yourself to write 10 secrets about the area or the quests that are currently going on, the NPCs that the players are around. and just start pulling stuff out of your ass and making stuff up on the spot, because you might not even use them. But I've created some really cool random quest lines or plot threads I didn't even think about until I just forced myself to just get those 10 out.
Well, that's some the of those thing haven't too. Even
been brought up for months.
I am so positive that in the world that you've written right now, because you were doing a lot of creative writing at that time, like in school too, you probably have a lot of stuff that we haven't run across. And that thought's exciting to me.
Definitely.
Completionist me makes me go insane that I know I'm missing something. I think we missed a beholder at some point and you told us about it.
Yeah.
No! We probably would have died. But
well, you probably would have been all right to fight it then. It would have been a tough fight, but you could have done it, I think. I think you guys are stronger than... You guys hit definitely higher than your CR.
I get impressed with my damage output on occasion. So I guess reeling it back, I wanted to first think about like what kinds of quests there even are. And people play video games and they know there's like some that are meme-worthy. You've got escort quests where it's point A to point B and protect a thing. To me, those are super boring, but if maybe... If we want to try to make each of these quests that I've like listed here into at least an interesting thing, like how would you make an escort quest interesting?
You guys did it, then you probably didn't realize.
I guess anytime an NPC shows up and is with you, right?
Well, it's the lady, the woman that you have to get from point A to point B in there.
She went into the lake. We failed. Yeah. We failed.
Okay, so that...
Is that the goal?
No. There's a lot of different ways that can go. I don't want to get too much into spoilers for Curse of Strahd.
Yeah, but
that can happen, and that's a weird thing.
We tried to save her. We just failed the checks. It sucked.
It's a really weird, interesting. And the frustrating thing about that thing is you won't understand it unless you go deeper into Curse of Strahd stuff. But that, getting Irina from, point A to point B, helping her, keeping her away from Strahd, there's a section where he attacks in a crypt, and you have to keep her safe, and she's like, he doesn't want to kill anybody at that time, he just wants to get her, and so he's just commanding her to walk towards him, and she falls under the spell. This is very early on. And the players have to basically keep her from getting to Strahd, and fighting back, the goons and goblins and stuff that come out. That's a better than Resident Evil 4 escort mission.
So, I mean, is the TLDR make it longer and more meaningful?
I think make it... Go back to our combat episode and make the combat... Don't make them just an NPC that sits on the sideline, or that you have to, surround and protect. Like, with her, she's moving. She's under a spell and is walking, and you have to kind of move with her and keep her safe. Or, obviously after the fight, you have to then... take her places, but make the NPC important to the players, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, a lot
otherwise,
of times
they're just gonna want to, they don't care if she lives or dies, if they don't care for the character.
Yeah, well, what happens is like you're maybe not Skyrim, but in an MMO or your MMO of choice, you've played this game for so long, I'm sure new quest writers have come and they've got some fresh faces, but a lot of the time you've got all your resources and you're just doing this quest for EXP. And it's literally just blank NPC, carry them on a cart, don't let it get damaged, point A to point B. Like, that kind of stuff can be really boring unless you're just an insane designer of a combat encounter around that or a regular encounter around it. But I didn't even...
90% of MMO quests.
Yeah. Would you consider Lord of the Rings an escort quest? Yeah,
in
escort
a different
Frodo.
Sense, yeah.
I mean, from the... don't hate me. What's their whole name?
The Shire?
The group that of the ring, they're them,
Fellowship?
The quest people. Yes, there you go, them. I mean, they're escorting Frodo.
Escorting Frodo, that's true. Or escorting the ring, I guess, if you go in a larger sense, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they don't suck. They just need to be the entire thing, I guess. I don't know. That's the elven rune I wanted to address, at least with that quest specifically, because it's a big meme. I know Ryan's not privy to memes right now, but addressing that.
I mean, escort missions in video games are... Besides underwater levels are the worst.
Some underwater levels have been good. Apparently the water fights in one of the earlier Monster Hunters is actually pretty good, which surprised me. But watching like a speedrunner go through the water temples in Ocarina of Time is insane. I've been watching some of those lately. But then you've got like kill quests, which, speaking of like Legend of Zelda, kill Ganon.
True.
But that's like a big one. Let's I guess go away from the massive ones and kind of reel it in, like
Kill Quest, would you define that as kill one NPC or like, you know, quests and games where like kill 10 tusk boars or something?
I guess it depends on the context, but if you're boiling it down to that thing or things need to die, then I would say it's a kill quest.
Okay.
I'd
say some of those quests would suck and some of those would be really good.
Yeah. And they can reach into anywhere. Like, you can make a boring quest. Like, go to this. Let's make it the worst quest ever. Get this cart with 12 babies on it and bring it to the forest and drop the babies off there nice and safe. And then kill the guy. Let's make it one of the most boring quests. Like, that's it. But along the way,
to me, I want to know what's going on with the babies. Why are they getting dropped off? Man, that seems cool.
Okay, maybe a bad example. That's kind of how sessions with me go. I throw a wrench.
Did that with some dude in the forest? You let him go drop 12
babies.
You let him go drop off a baby, and you were like, "What's going on?" And these creatures popped out. You know
what? Yeah, when did that happen?
Dormir and the baby and the.
Oh yeah, that shit was awesome. I do remember that. That was really cool. So, I mean, maybe I'm just moot point here. You can make them interesting
So, can you ever imagine playing D&D and your current quest is something ripped right out of World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy 14 or any MMO ever? Go kill 10 of these things. That seems to be, I would be so bored if that was the quest the DM gave me.
Well, if people are playing the game to where they need, or they're working with encumbrance and they really need equipment, the players themselves might create that quest out of need rather than giving it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's okay? Like, we literally need to go get 10 bones for this thing I want to do.
The problem is combat in MMOs take 5 seconds. In D&D, they could take 5 hours.
Long time. Long, long time.
So that one quest could take forever.
It very well could. So the kill quest is another really basic one. Something that I think, and maybe we've proved that all these can have depth. It literally just depends on how long you spend painting your brush on it. But another one, this is on top of Google, basically. And I've taken my notes here. A defense quest, which we had a really interesting one, too. There's some sort of module that you picked up at some point where it's like tower defense. And you brought a new mechanic in for it. It was when we fought the gnolls.
Oh, yeah. That's Matt Colville's. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, Matt Colville. Everything that I try to mention is always that guy. But a defense quest, like... X needs to be protected from Y, but in like a stationary sense, I suppose. We can just kind of like rattle off through them all too. There's probably my least favorite fetch quest, like go get thing and bring it back.
Yeah. Again, you'd have, I mean, with all these quests, just make an interesting quest. You got to make it meaningful. If you're fetching something for someone, you know, if you, maybe you're fetching the scroll of Tarrasque for some guy. We've had this in the Frown of the Frost Maiden, but the guy that wants it is trying to get, he tells you he wants to get rid of it, and then you give it to him, and then he actually uses it instead on you.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me just rattle off through these, because the solution, again, seems to be the same. As often, our solution is always session zero whenever you're needing to talk with your players about shit. But, like, fetch quest, go talk to this person, which literally is, like, the essence of something else is going to happen. I need you to go speak with somebody. Go talk to Professor Oak, who's going to give you Pokemon. I don't know. That kind of thing.
Yeah, in D&D, you could make it... go talk to this guy, go talk to this prisoner in the sea. He's been captured. Go find him and talk to him. Or in our campaign, since they went to this, I guess they didn't know they're going to go talk to this guy, but they went into this old abandoned village inside this crazy miasma of sorts. And they found this legendary character that, you know, that they've heard in stories, and they talked to that guy down there and they had a fun time chatting with him.
So an issue I'm running into right now with improv, despite having a general plan for my players, this is, again, a campaign that I'm doing in my own time. I asked them recently, like, how are you guys feeling right now? And they, like, aren't quite sure what's going on. They're having a good time, but I'm having a lack of that, like, coming to fruition during these quests that are giving them information or some sort of resolve or, like, aha moments. So I think, like, that's another core point, is that aha moment you can have during a quest.
Right.
Gives them information, a deeper understanding, like getting a little juicy tidbit. You want that. You want to eat that, put in a little popcorn.
Yeah.
Eat them up.
Those are my favorite sessions when you guys.
That's just, all you have.
You guys spend like 30 minutes to an hour, like, going, okay, so this happened. Let's tie those things together. Like, I showed, this is an old thing from one of my players. He made one of those, like, conspiracy walls.
Like, oh, yeah, things. I remember
this
that.
This was almost exactly a year ago is when he posted this. And I showed my girlfriend this. She's like, oh, my God, that's insane. She's like, okay, so how much this is true? And I was like, okay, well, this happened. Yeah, this. And it's funny. I'd love to see an updated one of these now that he knows even more information.
And he knows some stuff that we don't even know because he's from a place that we're about to go to. And it's really crazy, too. Your players will pick up on this world that you're running. Like, it's not fruitless work. If you've handpicked your players and forged them from, like, the elite fires of D&D player character heaven, I don't know. Do whatever you want.
I think we got lucky with my players.
Yeah. We've
in both campaigns.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, like, we were all in college at the time. People like split up and shit happens. Now we're recording a podcast and I'm in Chicago and you're in humid armpit land. Sorry. It's Denton, Texas. Isn't that bad. But quests are the facilitator for everything. And before we continue on that, I guess I kind of want to take a little break because I noticed we don't have like news, but I saw something that D&D Beyond was doing.
Tosh just comes out today. Everyone go pick it up.
That is true. I'm going to. Pause, Ryan. Please. Bring us in.
Oh.
To the news.
The first video
you
news
get
segment.
To see it now. I apologize. I'll leave, actually. Now you get to experience how uncomfortable that makes me every time. But I ask for it, so that's something I bring into here. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, literally all my news just comes from D&D Beyond, but you looking amongst all of their, like, how to use group patrons and whatnot that I think I mentioned before, but Tasha's is coming out tonight in, like, 4 minutes. We could switch this episode to a Tasha's first look right now if we wanted to, I haven't paid for it yet. I will. I'm going to be looking. I'm just going to jump the Warlock.
I'm shipped.
I'll literally just be looking at the Warlock and then close it. Like, that's it. And it's going to be everything that I already know. So that's cool. If you guys haven't bought that yet, definitely take a look. Or if you were like, oh, I wonder where Tasha's comes out, and then I'm going to listen to the Dungeon Crawl and see what goes on. Oh, wait a minute. I'll understand if you close the episode and you want to go check it out.
I won't.
But come right back. No. You got to give them a little bit of leeway, you know?
No, what you want to do is right when this episode ends, spend your week reading it, going through it, understanding it. If you have any questions, send them our way, because that following week, we'll be doing a Tasha's deep dive review.
Yeah, kind of in lieu of how we did the Rhyme of the Frost Maiden is the one, the words that
Rhyme
I'm
Rhyme of the
for.
Frost Maiden.
Rhyme for Frost Maidens. And I think, Kenneth, I don't know if it was you, mentioned to me that somebody released maybe on DM's Guild about like how to run the Frost Maiden herself?
Yeah,
was that you that mentioned that?
Yeah, well, he got one. I know he had a couple, maybe not a couple, but I know he has at least one of the tip running things. And I definitely recommended a few as well. So yeah, there's some cool supplements on there.
Yeah, definitely give those a check. And then something that we have been wanting to do in some of the next few episodes are like class guides or like deep dives into classes, how we might run them and what we feel about them. After Tasha's comes out, because that's going to be a bunch of new information that we'll have access to. But if you do like D&D Beyond and you're interested in them, they're actually releasing, I think, one of the first ones that they've done. Okay, no, they've been doing these for a while, actually. There's Monk 101, Way of Shadows. They've been doing these since, like, September, it seems. Eldritch Knight, September. Yeah, so it seems like they started there. But one of the recent ones that came out, and I only know just because it's Warlock 101, the Great Old One. Mm-hmm. And, like, it makes me realize how scary of a thing these people are, these existences are. And I hate reading shit because I'm getting a peek into, like, Ryan's binder because some of these he's taken changed the name, thank God. And I'm like, I don't know what's
going
on.
I've also changed some of their backstory and stuff, obviously, I've been inspired by them.
Yeah, if you want to look at these and, like, see, they're trying to, at least for D&D Beyond, bring a new spin on the older classes and older patrons, because cool. Tosh is coming out. You got a bunch of shiny new stuff, but I love that
it's all James Haig, right?
All James Haig. Do you know that guy?
He's the dude. Yeah, he's the dude.
He's the dude?
He's the guy.
He's the guy.
He writes for D&D Beyond, and he also helped Critical Role with some of their books that they released.
I go through a day and I do my day job and I end it and I'm like, I just want to play Genshin Impact. But these people that like spend their entire life writing shit for this, I have the most respect for them. It's such an interesting medium to be able to do. And we get to do it as well.
Yeah, it would be weird. I feel like, because I get inspired, then I start writing. But if that's your job, you got to write. I guess you just write and write and you delete the bullshit later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the age old thing of like, are you okay with getting paid for what you love to do? And does that suck it out of it?
Which reminds me, the next book in Brandon Sanderson's hit series, he's a fantasy author, by the way, his hit series, The Stormlight Archive, comes out tomorrow as well.
I don't even know what that is.
It's great. He's a great author.
I'm going to be honest. I don't remember. I shouldn't say this. I can't remember the last time I've read like an actual fucking book.
Yeah, Braxton does not read. Like manga.
But we read every day. We read all day. We're on the internet. I'm reading shit right now, learning about D&D. I read Rime of the Frostbane. That's basically a book. It's a Tronky book. So, give me a little. I'm branching out. I can read a second language, at least Japanese. That's fun.
Yeah.
But did you want to show the thing?
Yeah, I'll whip it out.
I'm sorry if you're listening. Ryan's about to show something right here. So go to your YouTube.
No, I'll talk about it too. So I kickstarted this a long, long time ago.
Oh, it's a Kickstarter thing, huh?
Yes. And they were having issues with production, but they finally got it out. And if you play in person, this might be your jam. They're still selling
Which I don't.
You might want to go. You might want to go pick these up. They're super cheap, and there's so many of them. These are 2D miniatures for.
That's what I figured.
For D&D, they have different sizes depending on how chunky of a boy it is, and they have multiple different sets. They have an undead set, an urban town set. Heroes.
Little packages.
Yeah, they come in like little magic packages. Legendary.
Couldn't you just technically like print some off yourself, hold it up, and stick it in there?
You definitely could. There's a lot of places that even set, just give you free 2D things that you can print out. And those are super cheap, great miniatures you can get. But the artwork on these are fantastic. You might be able to kind of see them here.
These are kind of holographic. It's a little hard to see.
Yeah, this is the undead set here. They have the front and back versions. There's the front of it there.
What kind of material is like cardstock or what?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
I mean, is it tough?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. It's pretty durable.
So Ryan's got like a sheet for those of you listening on the audio version here. A sheet of like spooky, scary skeletons and a bunch of miniatures that you could stick into some sort of base. And those bases, I would assume, have the size equivalent of like a miniature, small, gigantic, etc. creature.
Like there's a whole bunch of them here. I'll show you one of my favorite here, Braxton. It's like a big, big serpent-like creature here. Look at this bad boy.
What the hell is that? Wait, is that that kind of looks like the guys from Rime of the Frostmaiden.
Maybe it could be.
Is there like an index that tells you what they are, or are you just use
no?
Them for
so
you
this
want?
Is this specifically one here is the Kickstarter exclusive. So unfortunately, some of these you can't get anymore. But you can
so you're
get
just showing
the rest
off
of these.
Now.
Yeah, but I definitely recommend you go to, these are called GTG minis. They're fantastic. I'm excited to play with, because I have some minis, but they don't fit everything. And now I should have a mini for almost everything that I need. Look at this bad boy. It's gigantic.
Purple worm?
Yeah, big purple-ass worm.
Yeah, for those of you fans of the Adventure Zone, that's that thing that they fought at that one time for that one thing.
So go to the GTG Geek Tank Games. Tell them the Dungeon Crawl sent you. Buy yourself a set. Buy yourself multiple sets. I bought a lot of sets, if you couldn't tell.
He just showed quite a few. So
and
he's diving
great.
Into it. So, yeah, that was really cool. I mean, I'm jealous, to be quite frank, because I'm not in person. But we do have a little battle cam for me now.
Yeah, I got a battle cam for you. Unfortunately, I thought about it. Since they're 2D, you'll be looking down angles, and just seeing. I might change up the angle a little bit. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, that's really cool. I would say asset for people that, like myself, I can't paint miniatures, and 3D printing is still a niche thing right now. Like, it's becoming more of a household thing. I imagine homes in 2025 or 26 will have 3D printers.
I'd like to have one.
That'd be cool. They're still a little expensive now. Yeah. Anything else in the news segment here?
No, that's about it.
I guess just if you're listening to this on Spotify, on iTunes, or wherever the hell, you can check out our YouTube. We'll be uploading our old stuff there with just a cover of...
Yeah, I guess that's pretty big news.
You see, that's pretty big news. And get used to seeing that, because at some point, a live play might pop up on there. And then if we can get our Twitch working out too, whether it's on Melacior, M-E-L-A-C-I-O-U-R, or on the Dungeon Crawl itself, Yeah. We'll give you an official name for that at some point. It'll be down in the description. But wrapping that up and jumping back into quests here, I think how do you end them is the next thing, because the facilitation of a quest kind of goes. The player does the thing, uses their, you know, axe, chops the guy. The players know how to play the game for the most part. What do you, as a DM, do to end a quest? Do you create that first from with your philosophy that you kind of mentioned before, or do you just kind of feel it? Like, this is right. Time is
to
right.
For it to be good, I think you have to improv it, because if you have a set ending, then you're railroading it. If you know,
well,
exactly
you can have that set ending, right? You can have it.
I mean,
you can have a set ending, but you just need to be open.
True. Yeah. I guess you have a designated a right ending that you have in your mind, I guess.
Yeah.
If everything goes to plan, which things never really do, and then expand from there if you have to. I'm an improv dude for that type of stuff.
Really?
I mean, for the most part, you could take the Wizard of the Coast strategy and, like, you kill Strahd, and then the credits roll, and you read this huge paragraph, and that's the end of the it's the end of the campaign, the end of the quest line. That's, to me, that's not as interesting.
It just depends. It's a masterful touch. Like, I'm okay with railroady because, oh man, this is a huge philosophy here. So, knowing the end makes stuff boring to me. That's why I don't rewatch stuff. That's why if I like am told a spoiler, I typically don't go back and watch a show. But the fact that it's unknown to me, whether it's preordained or not to end that certain way, I don't know that. Unless it really feels like the DM is like, Braxton, you see you're going left, but like there's an invisible wall there that's forcing you to go right. That kind of shit, like that railroady stuff, I don't like that. I think many people are not okay with that. But if I don't know the end, I'm okay with it being set. Now, for Ryan's sake here, I can never tell that he's improvising it other than the times that he and I are like shooting the shit as an NPC or something. Like, obviously, that's improv. There's no way he knows everything that I'm saying right now. That's impressive. Like, I guess I've never processed that most quests kind of have probably taken many branching paths to get to that point. And if you somehow understood that, and have
there's
a set
sometimes
ending.
Where I have prepared a whole, like, they're gonna do this. I prepared an encounter for them on this pathway, and then they have an extra spell slot. They fly out of this location, and they don't encounter it at all.
Wow. I mean,
it just, things can take different turns, and I think as a DM you have to be open to that. Of course, if you're doing a Wizards of the Coast quest, a module, you can't, I mean, curse, some of them have built-in railroading to them, like Curse of Strahd.
Yeah.
If you go off the path, try to leave through the forest, you just get teleported back into the main pathway because you can't leave Ravenloft.
Yeah. This is why I'm excited for the live play, because this moment that he specifically talked, I mean, it made sense. We were doing a prison break, which I think we've mentioned in previous episodes before. We wanted to get somebody out and in. And it's literally a prison that's just like the one that Bane was in Batman. It's just a hold down. And I'm like, if I have a spell slot, I can cast it on three of us and we can just fly the fuck out of there. And we did that. And we talked about it. Like,
yeah, I knew there was an option. Yeah.
You tried to make me use my spells. I am a stingy boy as a warlock. You believe me, I will be crafty. So at least with Ryan, to give more credibility to his DMing, is things flow really well. And I think if you as a DM right now can take any like grain of salt from this, or like looking at what I'm saying, is a lot of what you do, we're just experiencing, and we have no idea how hard you're paddling under the water or how hard you're not paddling under the water. Sometimes it just happens and it really works. So from my takeaway from this podcast right now, because a lot of this is learning about how Ryan ran this, is have those crazy little juicy tidbits that you thought of while you're pooping on the toilet, looking at your phone, and you watched a YouTube video about some scientific concept, talking about my inspiration for the live play, and just run with it and go with that. I think it can maybe be overwhelming to have like a bunch of random really juicy tidbits A through C, but find the point. branch them together, like Ryan mentioned. I think that's the best way. And your quests will just happen. You're like, well, they want to go here and do this thing. That needs to happen. It's like the gates to life, basically.
Kind of an offshoot quest, but lore and world, you know, like you're saying, dropping little tidbits of stuff here and there.
Yeah.
To me, my favorite example of this is I started rewatching Game of Thrones with my girlfriend recently. I've even prefaced and said, once we get to a certain point, it'll just be fan fiction. We can make fun of it together. But up to that point, it's very well done. And even the books, but I absolutely adore how it's slowly, like, she's asked me questions like, who is that? Like, they mentioned a name. Who is that? I'm like, we'll keep learning about these people as it goes on. I love how it's not just lore dump. It's over the course of the first season, you slowly learn how this world is working and how these, you know, characters interact and this war that's happened in the past and how these people have interacted with that war and the different politics. And I'm sure Brax can tell that's definitely influenced how I run my games.
Super.
And I think
super influenced.
That's it. If you're going to be doing these quests, you know, bringing it back to quest lines, if you're having a quest line that the players are doing, tie in a few background history stuff into it. Not a whole lot, but a few here and there. And then obviously once you get farther, like, you know, where my players are now level 10, they've now gotten a good grasp of what the world is, at least how, you know, things have happened in the past. They have certain big characters in their minds, and I can now use those people a little bit more, and they can learn more information about these guys, and it makes the quest lines more impactful to me, at least.
Yeah, use those quests to help explore the world. Like, for me, that's really great advice to give to me in my perspective right now. Writing a world is like, I want to have this sprawling background that exists and these guys can unravel it, but it doesn't have to be there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Just having those little portions that you can work on while your players are away from it, and they can explore through the method of quests, I suppose. But the thing I feel I need to have in order for that to work are great NPCs with lives that have been lived. I think that's the most important part for that style of DMing a campaign setting. Like, if you're making a village and a town and you want to do stuff with it, but you also want to have a history, start at the town, start at the quests, and start with the NPCs.
I think going back to Game of Thrones, because I love it so much, or I did love it so much.
Well, part of it, yeah.
is I think a lot of good D&D is this way as well. A lot of good campaign settings start a little bit after some super crazy, interesting stuff just happened. Like Game of Thrones, a big war just happened, or, you know, Forgotten Realms, this crazy event just took place. And it's those characters have lived their lives, have experienced that war or this encounter. It's still fresh in their minds. And then the current party comes around and they're doing their own, you know, epic adventure. But this king, you know, was a part of this war that happened 15 years ago. And that war involved this guy and that guy. And you can slowly kind of branch out from there. But you want to make sure you don't fall into the trap of making everything interesting that happened back then, period. You want to make sure this stuff interesting happened for the players right now.
You don't want your campaign to be a wet noodle, and then you've got like this fireworks display they can watch on their phones. And like, well, that
you
seems
want the players to think, why didn't we
play
just
that
play?
World?
Yeah, why don't we just play 20 years ago, dude? What are we doing here?
Then that's what you do. You spend your time there trying to get them to learn about time travel. And then you get them there. That's how you fix your mistake.
Yeah. But you can go back to a episode called Rhyme of the Frostman Review where we talk about time travel.
Oh my god.
Yeah, without saying too much about it, but
that's saying too much about
some
that.
Stuff.
I get kind of heated at the end of that one. It's a reach, man. Yeah. Quests can get crazy, and really I started my notes saying, okay, like what types of quests there are, and trying to like really truncate them and get them into categories, but it's this amorphous thing of interacting with the world. Like, this is the one of the closest things to a controller for the player outside of just their character.
I'd say, Braxton, before we close here, I want to ask you, as a player, unless the quest is about your backstory specifically, how does the quest interest you? Like, what exactly makes you interested in saying, you know what, let's go do this, even if it's not about me? So obviously, if it's about you, you want to do it immediately.
That's a tough thing. I think you've been doing that lately, is like, if somebody needs something from me specifically, like it's something that my character can only do or accomplish, That's a really key thing. And I don't think I vocalized this or understood this until just this moment. So I'm glad my synapses worked in this way. So like example A, if my party member pleads to me emotionally because they need X to be done, that'll get me to do it as Braxton, not as my character who is an emotional empath and can do that. Or if like me as a warlock and I can do this spell, or you of the favored few of this adventuring group, you're the only one that can, I'm like, butter me up, basically. I don't know. That's make how you feel important. Yeah, make you feel important.
That's what I think like the idea is about. You want to make the players feel like they're important in this world.
Yep, so that works. It's hard to do in the beginning, but yeah, give them opportunities to be cool, I guess.
That's why I think the beginning almost is okay. If you're against railroading, I think the beginning of a campaign is where you should be, at least a little bit railroady. Yeah. Get them into the world. Get them to care about certain stuff. The players love their starting village now, you know, especially now they've come back and we're celebrating and loving on them. So give them a starting village that they can fall in love with and then burn it and destroy it in front of their eyes.
Yeah. So being a good DM and asking your players, just like Ryan did there, because if a political thing happens and I'm not involved in it at all, political intrigue doesn't interest me unless I'm like, I've got a card in
you've
that
had a hand
thing
in
that's
it.
Going on. Yeah, basically, which I do now. So you've probably noticed I'm a lot more engaged in what's going on. So I'm super excited to have a session, a campaign that people can understand, and we can bring examples from that. So it's not just like, do these guys have a thing I can listen to? Or what
yeah, I'm excited
about?
To see what, because I've only been a player a couple times, and most of the time it's been with you DMing. I'm excited to see A, how you've grown, and B, what you do with it.
It's going to be very different. I'm taking notes, obviously, from people who've had success with writing. Like, there's a big event that just happened in my world that the players are jumping into. A lot of the players themselves have just come out of a key experience in their life, rather than it just being, when I was 2 years old, my entire family was murdered and I was stolen by cultists, you know?
Yeah.
So it depends. But yeah, this has been our podcast about Quest, and it's our first one with videos on, and this can be the first time that you experience. I don't remember what are the orders do we do things. If you want to talk to us on Instagram or something or whatever the hell, you can do that at Dungeon Crawl Pod.
Oh my god, it's like pulling teeth with you over there.
at Dungeon Crawl Pod, that is for Twitter and Instagram. If you want to go on YouTube, search the Dungeon Crawl Podcast. That'll show probably most of our videos up until we try and get
ideally,
more people to watch it. Yeah, ideally. If you want to send us an email or something longer winded, you read Tasha's shit that comes out. Tasha's Cauldron, it's not her shit. You read that comes out, and you want to send us like a couple of questions, you're more than welcome to do that through Gmail. Send us messages at thedungeoncrawlpod@gmail.com. Discord.
Our Discord, yeah.
Where we talk about a lot of things, and there's a lot of memes, quite frankly, that are going there. It's not shit posty. We've got some good close friends there, and we would love to have
some
more.
Yeah, go to the listener comments section, and you can ask us about Tasha's or anything else that you have on your mind.
We'd love to have you.
We even have to be D&D related.
Yeah. We've come across a couple of milestones lately, which I think is why we're kind of jumping into putting things on YouTube. And I would say, like, within our podcasting scope, whatever we do on Buzzsprout, like, we've got more than, like, an average person who's just started a podcast. So thank you guys for listening.
Yeah,
I don't know
exciting.
Who you are. I want you guys to talk to us a bit more, and hopefully you enjoy what we continue to do in the future, and you like watching our faces on YouTube, maybe. Also, if you hate us, there's a thing you can do too, and Ryan, let's tell you about that.
Yeah, you can head over to your browser window, or if you have a Apple product, you can go to the podcast that is already on your phone and go find us, the Dungeon Crawl. You might already be listening to us on this podcasting platform. What the hell are you doing? Go over, make sure you've hit the 5-star option, and then where it gives you an option to write a review, do that and say whatever comes out of your mouth. Honestly, I just want to hear your words, because what you say is important, you know? I care about you right there, specifically as a human being. I care about you. I want to hear what you say.
There you go.
So say whatever comes to your mind. Hit the 5 stars.
Don't you want
to
see yourself right there?
You see, if you look at Braxton's camera there, the top review says, yep, 5 stars, and the comment says, good. I want to hear that. go there, go to the dungeon crawl. It really, honestly, does help us a lot. It gives us higher in the algorithm and gives more people the option to ability to listen to this podcast.
I hate pants. Glad to see fellow enthusiasts who hate pants.
I heard that.
I actually know who the yeah good guy is. I've since found out who it is. But thanks for hanging out, guys. As always, he's Ryan.
He's Braxton.
This has been the Dungeon Crawl. I am now using Adobe Audition. Sacrilege. We have phased out Audacity.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Nah. Audacity is the starter program. You've now leveled up.
Eh. Can I go back?